The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host. Today is Tuesday, and so I'm delighted to have back on for the first time this month due to prior commitments that we both had in our schedule, our dear friend Dr. Peter Hammond in South Africa, where it is 7 minutes past midday. It is 7 minutes past 10 here in London, UK, this Tuesday, May the 20th, 2025. So let's bring him up right now. Peter, are you with us?
I'm with you. Yes, Andrew. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And what Peter's got for us today, and he's also supplied the Ben Garrison image for the show. And Ben Garrison, I interviewed once. He was a really friendly guy, and he sent me a book of his cartoons, which I still have. It's very good. And the Garrison cartoon you will see in the post for the show at achshow.com if you're listening to this on another platform. But the title of today's show is The Real Story of the Communist Plan of Genocide Against Whites in South Africa. So, Peter, where would you like to start us off with today's timely topic?
It is very timely because right now Cyril Ramaphosa, who is the president of South Africa, and that means he's also a senior member of the South African Communist Party, because every ANC president of South Africa has been a senior member of the South African Communist Party, with whom they're in alliance since 1994, and that includes Nelson Mandela. And well, Cyril Ramaphosa is in Washington, D.C. right now. He's meant to meet with President Donald Trump tomorrow, Wednesday, and he says his plan is to clear up the misunderstandings and misinformation about South Africa and to set the record straight, which that means lies and propaganda, public relations repair operation. He's got a whole lot of cabinet ministers with him, including some white South African Democratic Alliance traitors who are happy to try and spread the communist lies that no, they're not waging a racist war against whites in South Africa and things like that. But you can always find whites who are willing to be Stockholm syndromed, gaslit and guilt manipulated or bribed, whatever the case may be, into selling out their own people. So I want to set the record straight. First of all, while Ramaphosa tries to say that there's no anti-white racism or plans for genocide in South Africa, it's interesting, a book surfaced written by Dr. Mario Ambrosini. Now, Dr. Mario Ambrosini, I happen to know him, and we joined in a couple of protest marches to Parliament together. He's a constitutional lawyer who became a member of Parliament, and he was a key advisor to Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi, a fine Zulu leader who was also a member of the Zulu royal family, had his ancestry dating all the way back to Keshwayo and Chaka, the founders of Zulus. Well, Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi was one of the few genuine Christians that we had in Parliament who was making a stand against the communists. And he is very hated. He went to be with the Lord recently. But the memoirs of Dr. Mario Ambrosini, published in 2014, is The Prince and I, A South African Institutional Odyssey. And in it, he's got an intriguing couple of anecdotes about Cyril Ramaphosa. who he describes as standing head and shoulders above all his colleagues in the ANC as a born leader and a negotiator, an expert negotiator. And so he says, in his brutal honesty, Ramaphosa told me of the ANC's 25-year strategy to deal with whites. It would be like boiling a frog alive, which is done by raising the temperature very slowly. Being cold-blooded, the frog does not notice the slow temperature increase. But if the temperature is raised suddenly, the frog will jump out of the water and escape. And he said, the black majority will pass laws transferring wealth, land, and economic power from the whites to the blacks slowly and incrementally until the whites lose everything they've gained in South Africa, but without taking too much from at any one given time to cause them to rebel or to fight. So points out that Ramaphosa has continually been pushing radical economic transformation and policies with an overriding focus on creating jobs and policies that create jobs or that threaten jobs must be reviewed and revised. And his idea is, of course, incompatible with the goal of expropriating all white wealth, land, and economic power till the whites have absolutely nothing. And when you look at the policies of Ramaphosa, you can see how they've been working this way for a while. And just this year, 2025, Cyril Ramaphosa has led his party, the ANC, to pass legislation in South Africa for expropriation without compensation. Many people think that's just aimed at farms. Well, that's the first target, but it's expropriation of property. And so any property, I mean, it could even potentially deal with intellectual property, but all property can be expropriated without compensation if the government so chooses. They've passed legislation for this. And when Donald Trump started to complain about the expropriation of compensation, he started to, nobody's planning to take anyone's property or farms in South Africa. And you know, this is fake news. No, it's not fake news. It's published in the Government Gazette and the Hansard, and it's a matter of public record. They passed this legislation in government. And on the very first day that Cyril Ramaphosa became president, he made a speech. We are going to pass legislation for expropriation without compensation. And he emphasized without compensation. Massive applause, standing ovation, roars and cheers, the most quoted from events of the night. And Cyril Ramaphosa has been very much locked onto this expropriation without compensation. And in speeches, he said, we're going to take farms from the whites and we're going to give it to our people. And our people means that obviously whites aren't part of the our people in South Africa. And I was at a public meeting, by the way, of the ANC some years ago, where they were chanting their slogan, the people shall govern. And I said in my discussions with people around me when we were doing witnessing afterwards, I'm one of the people too. And they said, no, you're not. I said, well, I'm a person. No, you're not a person. Well, what am I then? What do you mean by the people? And this Communist Party member explained, the people means members of the party, party members. If you're not a Communist Party member, you're not one of the people. So did you understand that, Andrew? You're not a person unless you're a member of the Communist Party. And then indeed. I'm sure you've probably learned that before. By their definition, the people mean members of the Communist Party. So that was intriguing. So when he says, we will take farms from white people and give it to from the whites and give it to our people, they're talking about to the communist cadres, to the comrades. And you are not our people. If you're not a member of the Communist Party, you're not one of the people. And you're not even a person in their mind. So I think that is interesting how they dehumanize those that they target. So that's intriguing just for starters. And so he's also passed legislation this year called the Bella Bill, Basic Education Laws, which is basically anti-Afrikaans. It's to get the majority language of the white people out of the way, that you can't get education in Afrikaans. It's a threat to homeschoolers, private schools, Christian schools, church schools. And the Bella Bill is considered one of the worst threats to the culture of our people in this country. And then there's another piece of legislation that passed this year to basically disarm private security companies. Now, we've got more people involved in private security in South Africa, over 600,000, than all the police Army, Air Force, Navy combined. So more than the entire security forces, both police and military combined, we've got double as many involved in private security, which is really a vote of no confidence in the government. You know, in the past, there would have been no place for private security because we had police and army who did the job just fine. But now private security, everybody's got a private security company. And that includes myself and our mission, because I was traveling a lot. I ensured that my wife and children had a private security company they could call Armed Response Private Security Company. These are very common, and so much so that we have police stations in South Africa. You may think this is a joke, but it's not. There are police stations in South Africa who have signed up to a private security company. They've got their sign outside, and they've got a panic button that the police can call for an armed response private security company if the police station comes under attack. That's actually happening. So the police even use private security companies. And you can be sure so does the government and government ministers, because they can't trust their own police or army to protect them adequately. I mean, that's a real vote of no confidence in the government, that you've got people taking on private expense things that you would have thought is the first duty of government, you know, the defense of the realm. But more than that, we've got so many private schools and so many homeschoolers, which is also a vote of no confidence in the government education system, that people are willing to pay more for private education than get the free education, which their taxes pay for, from the government. And you can say the same for private hospitals and so many other things too. So basically everything run by the state is a failure, and people are using alternatives. So why would you want to disarm private security companies unless you want to murder the people, you know, like in Rwanda? And I actually was at a public meeting where an African National Congress member of parliament who was campaigning for why we should vote for them. It was at a prestigious club in Cape Town called the Kelvin Grove, which is a very prestigious club. And I was there with a whole lot of other people listening to this black ANC member of parliament. And he said, one day we're going to kill all you whites like flies. And so I said, like the Rwandan Holocaust. And he turned around and pointed his finger at me and said, yes, exactly like Rwanda. And so I said, do you remember how that turned out? And he looked a bit hesitant for a moment. And I said, they failed. And the outnumbered David minority beat the Goliath majority. And today it is the Tutsi victims who are running Rwanda, and the Hutu mass murderers, the Intifada, have had to flee into the Congo to get away from justice. And he seemed to have forgotten that part. So I said, now the Tutsi were not known for their military expertise over the years, but they rose to the occasion. But when you're dealing with the Boers in South Africa, when you're dealing with the Afrikaners and the whites in South Africa, you're dealing with people who've got a tremendous history of military expertise. And we've had many wars through the generations. And remember, there are 650,000 veterans of the South African Defense Force who fought in Angola in South Africa today. And we actually won our war. We've got real veterans. What do you think is going to happen if you try to wipe out the white people in South Africa? And there's many of our veterans who are overseas as defense contractors fighting for Britain or America and the Middle East and so on. And they would come home if their people were being attacked, and they'd bring friends. What do you think is going to happen if you try that? And he obviously hadn't thought this, and he was quite silent and somber for a moment. But there are people out there, imagine it, members of parliament standing up saying, we're going to one day kill all you whites like flies. Now, here's President Ramaphosa in America trying to tell American president he's been fed disinformation about there being plans for white genocide in South Africa. And let me give you some facts here. The most dangerous job in the world is not being a bomb disposal expert in a war zone like Iraq or in Ukraine. Farmers in South Africa are being murdered at a rate four times more than even the police. And so many South African farmers are experiencing the highest rates of violent crime anywhere in the world. So to give you an example, I was visiting a farm a while ago in the Orange Free State, and as the sun began to set, the people sort of got very agitated and checking that the outside fence was secure and that the gate was padlocked. And then the family moves into the home, and everybody, even little child, got duties. You know, they've got their firing positions, they've got their duties, whether it's the fire extinguishers, the satellite phones, the shortwave radio communications, because throughout the night, the farmers are communicating with one another, and you've got to check in every couple of hours, or they'll send a vehicle to check up on you. Because when farm attacks take place, they often spend the whole night torturing the people to death. And so you want to check that everyone's fine. If you don't hear from them, then they send a reaction unit out to check you at the farm. The tension, you can't imagine the tension as the sun sets and each farm prepares for war every single night. And people asking why there would be Afrikaners fleeing from South Africa, going to America and taking Donald Trump's very generous offer of refugee status and offering American citizenship. Now, of course, I'm sad to see any South African leave the country of their birth. I'd prefer our people to be able to be safe in their own homeland, but we are now a minority in our own country. Farmers in South Africa have been killed at a far higher rate than even our soldiers ever were in any and all of the wars our country's been involved in. And the New Zealand largest newspaper, the Metropolitan newspaper, the New Zealand Herald, which is 150 years old, the oldest newspaper in New Zealand, stated that South African farmers are being killed at a greater rate than even New Zealanders have been during times of war, like First, Second World War, Vietnam, and so on. And that the murder rate is one of the highest in the world, and that farmers are one of the most vulnerable people in the world. And so, for example, the world average of murders is 6 people per 100,000 of the population are murdered every year. That's the average in the world. It's less than that in Britain, for example. The average South African, 34 people are being murdered every single day per 100,000. And in Honduras, the world's most dangerous country, it's 90 people a day are being murdered per 100,000. In Caracas, the world's most dangerous city, it's 119 per 100,000. Well, South African farmers, white South African commercial farmers, 156 per 100,000 are being murdered. So, you know, that's just one statistic. There's a whole lot of others. Now, the Transvaal Agricultural Union keeps very detailed statistics on farm murders. We heard just recently from the government, you know, there's no targeting of farmers. Only 50 farmers have been murdered so far this year. So far this year, we're in 2025 and we're in May. 50 farmers, if the statistics are accurate, that's a lot of farmers to be murdered in one period of the year, just in 5 months. And they're saying only, like, oh, that's all right then. And that's not referring to the kind of murders. Let me just give you one example where a man was bludgeoned with golf clubs, and then he was hit with machetes, pangas, cut into, and while he is lying bleeding to death on the ground, they raped his wife and young daughter in front of him and then shot them all. And then they drowned his young son, who's about 12 years old, in a boiling bathtub that they filled with just hot water. And they stuffed a rag in his mouth so that he could hardly breathe, and because he was crying, and they shoved his head underwater until he drowned in boiling water. Now, what's this but an attempt at genocide, malice, hate, and to killing these people? So when you give these statistics, remember, we've got a whole book out called Kill the Boer, written by Ernst Rutz, who's a friend. And Ernst Rutz has documented the murder of thousands of white farmers. And the details are shocking, you know, bludgeoned to death, stabbed to death, shot to death, hacked to death, buried alive, burned with irons. I mean, that's like a hot iron on a stove, heated up so that it's got the skin of the person on it still. Tortures. You just can't imagine why people would do such things. Strangling people to death, even with barbed wire. And just the most disgusting, you can just see it's demonic. And my daughters actually confronted some of these people when they were trying to rip oil on canvas frame paintings off the walls of the Molly Blackburn Hall in University of Cape Town. She was at a dancing event when a Rhodes Must Fall event exploded. And there they were taking all the original oil on canvas artworks off the walls and burning them on a bonfire at the bottom of Jameson Steps at the base of Jameson Hall, which is the center of University of Cape Town, which Cecil Rhodes paid for and set up. And so my daughter, being an artist, intervened, and she physically sought to restrain these thugs who were trying to rip the artwork off the walls and add to the bonfire. And she is trying to stop them. So, you know, as a parent, I felt both pride that she would make a stand like that, and of course, fear that she is putting herself in such danger. And my daughter said to me, "Dad, they looked at me like they hated me." I said, "Daniela, they do hate you." He said, "Dad, they looked like they were demon-possessed." And I said, "Daniela, I'm sure they are demon-possessed." And she said, "Dad, they looked like they wanted to kill me." I said, "Daniela, they do want to kill you. And they sing about killing whites." And in fact, there were, at that very time, there's a photo we've got of a student walking around, a black student up at University of Cape Town, with a message on it, "Kill all whites." And apparently that didn't violate the code of conduct of the university, because this man was in public places walking around wearing "Kill All Whites" t-shirt. I don't think you could have any other ethnic group mentioned as a target of such hate without some reaction, but apparently whites deserve whatever they get. Now, here's the Transvaal Agricultural Union statistics. 2012, 173 attacks on farmers, 61 murders. 2013, 242 attacks on farmers, 61 murders. 300 attacks in 2014, 68 murders. 2015, 344 murders, 344 attacks, 70 murders. 2016, 406 attacks, 78 murders. 2017, 418 attacks on farms, 70 murders. Now, the first thing that you might notice is there's far more attacks than murders, which means the farmers are very well prepared and very alert, and the farmers are often successful in beating off the attackers. And the attackers often are large numbers. It's not just attacking twos and fours and eights and sixes. You get people attacking 12s and 17s. There can be groups of up to 20 and more attacking a single farm. And we've got some of the close-circuit TV camera pictures showing, you know, large groups coming, platoons and so on. The farm attacks are more than the successful murder. So most farm attacks actually fail, which is a tribute to how resilient and alert our farmers are, many of whom are veterans of our wars and who fought in Angola against the Cubans. And many are well-armed and do regular training, combat training groups and so on. Now, the murders are scattered around the country, and the worst areas are in northern South Africa, northern Transvaal. And the Orange Free State is quite bad. Gauteng's probably the worst, which is what we used to call the Witwatersrand, which is the most densely populated part of the country. And Eastern Cape is quite high too. KwaZulu-Natal, there's quite a lot of mass murders of farmers. But we've got statistics where one of these statistics was every 7 days, that's every week, a farmer is murdered in South Africa. And then there's another. Farm attacks are happening every single day, but farmers are being murdered at least once a week, according to the general statistics being averaged. You can see that by 2018, it increased to a farmer being murdered every 5 days. The oldest victim of the attacks in that time period was 87 years old. The youngest person being murdered was 3 years old. Most attacks involved 11 attackers. So they come like in platoon strength. It's like a military operation. Many of them actually have military weapons. And the subtitle of the book, Kill the Boer, Kill the Farmer, by Ernst Ritz, is Government Complicity in Farm Murders. And in many cases, when farm attackers have been captured, it's been turned out that they must be released because they're either members of the National Intelligence Service, which is like our Secret Service, or police officers or South African National Defence Force officers. And of course, used to be communist terrorists, and now they're in the uniform branch of the military or the police. And so we can see there is government complicity. Now, some people might say, but surely it was just individuals. Maybe so, but then they don't get prosecuted and they are taken back into the units. And when you've got people from the National Intelligence Service involved in farm attacks who have to be released by the police because the government says, no, he's one of ours, that just shows how evil this whole thing is. Yet the ANC president, Cyril Ramaphosa, who's also a Communist Party member, claimed there are no murders of white farmers in South Africa. But we've got not any books on it documenting this and reports. We've got books like The Great South African Land Scandal by Dr. Philip Du Toit. We've got Land of Sorrow by Major General Chris Van Sail and Dr. Dirk Herman. 20 years of farm attacks in South Africa. And they document the details. We've got Farm Murders by Carla van der Spee, where victims tell their stories, written from a woman's perspective. And it's absolutely heartrending getting these stories. And I know many of these people personally. I've met people whose husband was murdered and things like this, and just hideous. So when you look at the rate of being murdered, and when we say murdered, we're talking about tortured to death. And one of the farm murderers convicted of murdering four white farmers, he said he hates whites and he saw murdering them as just like going to work. Just work. So the Transvaal Agricultural Union recorded over 2,000 attacks and 1,266 murders just between 1991 and 2009. That's an 18-year period. And the South African Agricultural Union recorded 10,151 farm attacks and 1,541 murders between 1994 and 2008. And my best statistics is we're talking about over 4,000 farmers and their family members have been murdered since Mandela became president in 1994. And to give a better perspective on it, we had 70,000 white commercial farmers back in 1994, and they were feeding 100 million people when our population in South Africa was 28 million. So that's a phenomenal achievement for 70,000 white farmers to be feeding 100 million people. People as far away as Congo were being fed by the mealie meal and other farm produce being produced in South Africa. Today, we have less than 30,000 white commercial farmers left. Less. It might be more like 26,000. But I haven't seen an official statistic for a while. And they're feeding 40 million people, which is a great accomplishment. But the population of South Africa has doubled since 1994 to over 60 million. So we've got 60 million people living in South Africa, most of whom weren't born here. They sort of illegal immigrants, aliens, they might be called another place, or new citizens, I think the Labour Party might be calling them. But here the country is not able to feed itself anymore because the number of farmers has been decimated. We've got less than half the number of farmers now that we had in 1994. And I call it a genocide already. There are people calling for genocide because remember we've got political parties like the EFF, the Economic Freedom Fighters, whom I call the Everything for Free Party, who are officially on their own website a Marxist revolutionary party. And their leader, Julius Malema, has led them in stadiums where there can be 100,000 in a single stadium, all dressed in red T-shirts with the red berets and the communist stars, and they're chanting, kill, 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 kill the Boer, kill the farmer, shoot to kill, shoot the farmer, shoot the farmer, ba, 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 ba. And you can just watch these videos. It's unbelievable. This is a member of parliament, a leader of a political party, leading up, you know, the Honorable Julius Malema, and he is chanting in the zombie dance while all dance up and down, shouting about killing white people, killing farmers, and cutting the throat of whiteness and things like this. And then he said in an interview, we have not called for the killing of all white people at this time. And when they said, what do you mean at this time? Do you mean there's a time you might call for it? He says, well, a revolution calls for killing, and we are revolutionaries. And in a revolution, you have to kill. And so, and he said, he even quoted Che Guevara, that the basis of a revolutionary is to hate. He said, we must turn ourselves into cold-blooded killing machines. And these are quotes that they've even put on banners that they've carried in their marches. So we're dealing with a hideous situation. And now you've got people like the president of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa, claiming there's no targeting of white farmers. Nobody's killing white farmers, and there's no attempt to take the land. But there is. Why are they passing legislation like expropriation or compensation? And they have taken farms. Now, in the early days, they took farms and they paid a low, you know, pennies on the pound sort of thing, very low price. But they paid to take some farms away from white farmers. And in every case, those farms have failed and are not producing anything now. And the workers used to be getting an income at the farm are now out of work. And the fields that used to produce crops are now barren. And the herds of cows that used to be milked have been slaughtered for meat. Literally, slaughtering dairy cows for meat. And then, oh, the dairy farm doesn't work anymore. Let's close it down. And all over the place, you even had Mandela's own herd of cattle, which is a prized thing in African culture. You value your wealth by your cows. And the report came out that shortly after Nelson Mandela died, his cattle were starving to death. They weren't being looked after well enough by his own relatives. So even ex-president Nelson Mandela's cattle herd at Kunu were dying of starvation through neglect. And if they won't even care for Nelson Mandela's cattle, you can imagine what's going on with the rest of the poor domestic animals in farms, and what's happening to the sheep, and what's happening to even the goats and the chickens. The situation is terrible. And yet you've got liars out there, not just in America, not just the media, not just politicians, but even there are white South Africans standing up saying, there's no talk of genocide in South Africa. There's no murder of white farmers. There's no racial legislation against whites in South Africa. We have 141 race-based laws in South Africa. That's, we have more race-based laws today under the African National Congress in South Africa than we had under the so-called apartheid national party. So just to give you a personal anecdote here, when my first daughter was born, Andrea was born 1991, officially under apartheid, my wife said to me, you could have won the last apartheid babies. And sort of like a joke. And I went to Home Affairs and I had to fill out all the forms, which I did. And when I got the certificate back, it didn't mention race, even though I'd been asked to fill in race of father, race of mother, and so on in the application for the birth certificate. So being a writer and a researcher, I probed a bit and said, I noticed that the race of the baby is not mentioned on the birth certificate. She said, oh, some people object to that being put in. And I said, well, I have no problem with how God's made any of us. And she said, if you want to have the race and you need to get the permission from the Minister of Home Affairs. And I said, why would you need permission to obey the law? Surely you need permission to get an exemption from the law. And she said, well, they're planning to remove the race of the baby and the parents from birth certificates in the future. I said, it hasn't been tabled yet. That's coming up later this year. Surely the Race Classification Act is still in force now. She said, I'm sorry, we have strict orders not to include the race in any birth certificate. Well, fair enough. And when my next daughter was born, 1993, Daniela, not surprisingly, no race was mentioned in the birth certificate. But then 1995, my first son is born, and lo and behold, the race of the baby is on the birth certificate. How did that happen? Nelson Mandela is meant to have abolished apartheid. No, actually, he brought it back. President P.W. Botha had abolished all apartheid legislation, and now Nelson Mandela gets to power, and instead of getting rid of apartheid, he brings it back because he wants to use race classification for his affirmative action, BBBEE, broad-based black economic empowerment, race quotas act. And so suddenly I discovered both my sons had their race mentioned, both 1995, 1999. Isn't that interesting? And then soon my sons discovered they're too male and they're too pale. And so all government legislation is prejudiced against them when it came to sports teams, when it came to race quotas. All these things came to force. So my children are born under the so-called rainbow nation, this colorblind, non-racial South Africa of Nelson Mandela. They were racially discriminated against. And the scripture says in Isaiah 5, verse 20 to 23, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who justify the wicked for a bribe and take away justice from the righteous man. And that's what we've seen with the ANC. Now, the police commissioner, who has had to be fired now because of criminal activities with gangsters. At the time, the Commissioner Seeley refused to acknowledge that the murder of farmers was any issue. And they not only got rid of the commando system, which had protected the farmers for over 300 years, and went out of their way to disarm the farmers, literally removing commando weapons from the farmers. But they abolished the special police task force that was focused on protecting farms and rural areas. So they basically tried to make them more vulnerable. And the truth behind farm terrorism in South Africa is farmers in South Africa are now being murdered at a rate of about 220 per 100,000 per year. And that's AfriForum statistics. And they've got the details month by month, year by year, the murders being done. They've got the numbers of attacks and number of murders. And it's quite clear at the attacks. We've had just since 2006 to now over 5,500 attacks, over 2,000 murders. And that's just in the last 20 years. But if you go for the 20 years before that, it's another huge amount. So basically, we're dealing with, without a shadow of a doubt, an attempt to target farmers. The average ratio per 100,000 murder of the general population worldwide today is 9. 9 people per 100,000 are murdered. And in this country, it's over 220,000 over 220 per 100,000 of the farmers. So the farmers are being murdered at a greater rate than any other section of population, and even more than the police, even more death toll than bomb disposal experts in the Middle East. And these are brutal, absolutely savage. And some of these chaps in court who've been captured and brought in, you get this like William Kelleni. He, at age 29, said, "I killed the whole family because they were white." And he thought that would get him off the case in court. And he murdered a one-year-old, Kayla, on her first birthday, by the way. The entire family of Clifford Rawstone wiped out. Janine, the infant daughter and mother-in-law, Hester Rawstone, also murdered. And, I mean, that's back in 1994. That's one of the early murder attacks. And it goes all the way through. You've got people arrested. One arrested man was a police inspector, Michael Soldiele. He was captured in 2009 for murder in Howick, in KwaZulu-Natal. So the book by Ernst Roets, Kill the Boer, the subtitle is Government Complicity in South Africa's Brutal Farm Murders. And we've got pictures from closed circuit TV cameras just before a farm attack where military jammers, which can block cell phone calls for up to 500 meters on backpacks. Where do you get military jammers from? I mean, these are very high-tech military grade weaponry, which farm attackers have. And farming victims are often tied up, cut with machetes, pitchforks, burned with boiling water, scalded with hot irons, dragged behind vehicles, raped and mutilated in incomprehensible savagery. And so Kill the Boer is a book documenting the brutal reality of the farm murders in South Africa and how the ANC government is complicit in this crisis. Now, it's argued that the Southern government should be regarded as complicit for a variety of reasons. For instance, it has deprioritized the crime, deepening the worsening crisis and closing down the commandos, closing down the police task force that specialized. And even more seriously, they've negatively stereotyped white farmers. They scapegoat white farmers. They dehumanize them and they demonize them. And they romanticize violence inflicted upon the farmers, calling it, you know, part of the struggle for racial equality and freedom and returning the land. And they propagate hate from political platforms. And they scorn and ridicule the victims of these attacks. One of our friends, Peter Kronewald, who's a member of parliament, stood up in parliament and started to read out some of the hideous ways in which farmers are tortured to death. And there was laughter in the parliament from these so-called honorable members of parliament, laughter from the ANC and EFF benches, laughing at descriptions of disgusting torture of children and raping of women. And one of the people shouted from the backbenches, "Bury them alive." And there was more applause and laughter. Now, this is the kind of environment in Parliament, to this. So you can see there's a dehumanizing and a demonizing of the farmers and of the whites. And the whole attitude from the press has also been, well, they kind of deserve it, you know, because they're white. And this is the reaction even from churches in America. The Episcopal Church has objected to white refugees from South Africa being brought in specifically because they're white. And that they don't, you know, so what if they're being targeted and persecuted and murdered and hacked to death? They deserve it. They're white. And this is the kind of attitude, the amount of anger and hostility poured out on these first 49 Afrikaans refugees who've arrived in America, courtesy of Donald Trump's offer. It just shows why they need to flee. And I am sorry for them leaving, and I wish they would stay and help us make a better country. I'm part of Independence Forum, where we seek to bring about an independent Cape of Good Hope. And obviously, we'd prefer our people to stay here than to flee. But I can't blame them, because who wants to live in that kind of situation? Many of them might have lost loved ones. And in fact, one woman said her farm had been attacked 4 times. She said that was just enough. And she came from Orange Free State, and she's now in America. And who can blame people who don't want to be brought up surrounded by hatred? Your own government laughs at stories of torture of your people. And so it's argued that a looming process of ethnic cleansing should be regarded as a serious threat, something we should campaign to prevent. Because you've got people like Julius Malema, Member of Parliament, speaking up about we need to cut the throats of whites, we need to shoot to kill, kill the Boer, kill the farmer, and dancing, and mobilizing up to 100,000 people at a time to dance and sing, kill the farmer, kill the Boer, shoot to kill. There's complicity in the South African media, which you can see right now. They're falling over themselves to condemn the Afrikaans people who've left the country, who've taken up refugee status, condemning the very concept that any white could be a refugee from South Africa. Why would someone want to leave a country where your parliamentarians laugh at people being scalded to death, raped and hacked to death and strangled to death, and where they're saying that you're all thieves and that all whites deserve to be murdered and things like this? And you can see the biased reporting and the complicity of the South African media, who make dumb comments like, statistically, more blacks are murdered each year than whites. Well, yes, but the whites are now a tremendous minority in the country. We are a minority in our own country. When I was born in 1960 in Cape Town, the whites were the majority in Cape Town, and we were one-third of the population of South Africa. There were many migrant workers and people came from other countries to benefit from the economy in South Africa, and especially work on the gold mines and taking back money, and they came back as rich people in their communities. So the South Africa has gone from where whites were 34% of the population of South Africa in 1960 to where we are 7% of the population today. So we're a minority in our own country now. And this is considered the way it should be. And is that not part of the definition of genocide? Whites are being vilified, and there's negative stereotyping and caricaturing of white farmers in particular. So, for example, there's in Kill the Boer book, they've got a chart showing media reporting and racial characteristics. And so white on black violence is mentioned. They put there's 16 incidents of white on black violence, but it's got 75 articles in the media. And then there were 206 incidents of black on white violence, but only 7 mentions in the media. Black on black violence, for every 15, there's about 6 mentions. For whites on white violence, you could have 3 incidents, and then there's 10 reports. So they're showing that racial characteristics in both English and Afrikaans media in South Africa is to ignore the black on black violence, to ignore the black on white violence, to ignore the white on white violence, but only focus on white on black, which is in many cases reaction, even self-defense in some cases. And then the media reporting, they show another study where there were 15 white on black incidents and 30 reports. There were 197 black on white incidents, but only 5 reports in the media. Black on black, there were 13 incidents and 4 reports, and white on white, there was 3 incidents and there were 8 reports. And then they've got more examples of the horrific torture that accompanies these crimes, using drills, irons, burial, strangling, stabbing, hacking to death. The most dangerous occupation is not to be a policeman or a fireman or a soldier, but it's now to be a farmer in South Africa. And that's the person who promotes food security, who creates jobs, they're being targeted for the most hate. There's something radically wrong with this. The sad truth is that there should be intensive discussion, and this should be a priority to deal with anywhere in the world. But not in South Africa. The government is complicit in the farm murders. If anything, they're applauding it. And so when Ernst Ritz's book, Kill the Boer, was launched, it was a striking launch. And there was so much attack by the media that you'd bring out a book on this. Like, why do you want to bring out a book highlighting 4,000 white farmers being tortured to death in South Africa while politicians are saying, kill the boer, kill the farmer? And on the morning of the launch, an 86-year-old farmer from Hartbeespoort was hacked to death on his farm. And kill the boer doesn't mince words, and it doesn't leave out the details about the cruel farm murders and terrorism. And these are not ordinary murders. And the loaded statements by politicians and how they lead to an increase in farm attacks and murders. Yet we've got a court in South Africa that said singing kill the boer, even by a member of parliament, does not constitute hate speech, doesn't constitute incitement to violence. I don't think you could do this even in the United States of America, where they've got a very high priority on the First Amendment that you've got freedom of speech. But you can't sing kill the anyone in America. That would be something that would definitely get one police arrest and court cases, because that's an incitement to violence. And this isn't just something arbitrary that somebody's singing and nobody's acting on it. There's a lot of farm murders that follow the singing of kill the boer, kill the farmer. And Malema has continued to say it's a struggle song. And, you know, so they started to shout about Ernst Ritz's book. Your book is racially divisive. So Ernst Ritz asked, so what do you suggest we do for racial harmony? And the response was, kill the boer. Now, if that's the solution, you can tell what the problem is. And the book points out the media's double standards in terms of reporting on farm murders and reference to race. So, for example, if it's a white on black crime, they use the race of the attacker, but they never give you the race of the attacker when it's black on white crimes. And Huffington Post, they don't even use graphics in case of black on white crimes or any visuals, because that might identify the attacker. And so the dots on the attacks, they've got the actual statistics gaps between what they've documented, like the Transvaal Agricultural Union and AfriForum, and what the South African Police Service stats are. In fact, the South African Police Service have now been ordered by the government, by the Minister of Police, not to release statistics on these matters. And they now just give you percentages, like, you know, these murders have increased by 6.9% and thefts by 4.8% and, you know, car hijackings by 14% and so on. They don't tell you what the previous amount was. They just give you some kind of pretense at statistics by giving you percentages of increase or decrease instead of giving you numbers. These numbers would just be too shocking, too overwhelming. And the book is more than figures and statistics. It has stories. People like Sue Howarth, who was murdered while the attackers opened fire on her and her husband while they were sleeping in 2017. And so many stories of Roger and Christine Solik, where the judge said during sentencing that a great measure of rage and venom had been evident at the crime scene. And that was 2017 victims, Christine Solik. Dries Steenkamp, 66 years old, shot dead in his farm outside Ladenburg in Mpumalanga, Eastern Transvaal. Vanessa Staflu, whose 3 and 5-year-old children ran into the darkness after they'd seen their mother murdered right in front of their eyes. And Johann Stratum, whose skull was cracked with a piece of metal, afterwards he was dragged behind his vehicle on a dirt road until he died of a burst liver. That was in 2010, Johann Stratum. And then there's Karl Stolz, who was 21 years old, murdered on a farm close to Bloemfontein. And then there's Ati Potgieter, stabbed 151 times with a panga, a garden fork, and a knife, after which his wife, Vilna, and two-year-old daughter, Vilhelmina, were murdered. And of little Vilhelmine, only 2 years old, who was hacked to death with a panga. I mean, can you imagine? Little two-year-old. Now, it's not just white farmers being killed. There's Eliza Mokanat and Augustine Konjana, two farm workers, strangled during a farm attack, shot in the stomach. And last year in the Free State, a black commercial farmer was shot dead by attackers. His wife was kicked and shot. Now, it's printed on the cover of the book Kill the Boer that the content is not for sensitive readers. But the fact is, no person can afford not to read this book at this time to understand what is going on. The facts contained in the book are essential for anyone who wants to deliver constructive input in this debate on farm murders and farm attacks. And I don't know if it's even going to be mentioned by Cyril Ramaphosa and his delegation who are going for public relations to Washington, D.C. But documentation such as provided by Ernst Rutz in Kill the Boer empowers readers with the knowledge of the immeasurable value when you're being asked why farm murders are different from other murders and why the Southern government is complicit in this attempt at genocide. They're seeking to incite genocide. The content is graphic, but we don't have the luxury to be sensitive about the facts because Kill the Boer is a campaign slogan of the African National Congress, the Economic Freedom Fighters, and the Southern Communist Party, who are all working together to murder whites and to steal their land. And farm murders have become an uncomfortable, thorny political topic of discussion, but it must be tackled. And I trust that the United States government will hold the ANC's feet to the fire, so to speak, figuratively speaking. Keep them to the facts. Don't let them get away with trying to deny the reality that the government is complicit in trying to incite genocide against the whites in South Africa. And that this is exactly what Cyril Ramaphosa said he'd do years ago, that he planned to take away everything the whites owned, to take away all their power, take away their land, to take away their wealth, take away their influence. This is what they're seeking to do. And it's a comprehensive attempt to try and destroy the whites in South Africa. Is that not the very essence and definition of genocide? And so here's a few quotes from ANC leaders. All white people are criminals and should be treated as such. We need to take their property, deny them job opportunities, treat them as second-class citizens. White people are rapists, dogs, and cowards. We need to sing songs about they should be mowed down and murdered. White people are in the minority, and that means they must have fewer rights than the rest of us. That is how democracy works. Yes, absolutely. If they dare to protest against these views, we must tell them to keep their mouths shut because they are racist and they are simply getting what they deserve. I mean, how's that for a level-headed comment? And that's why the scripture says, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who justify the wicked for a bribe and take away justice from the righteous. This war on whites is seen in economics. We've got 141 racial legislations, black economic empowerment, affirmative action, job reservations, racial quotas, even from sports teams, to keep whites and particularly white males out of government, out of commercial employment, and out of sports teams. But the violent, the vicious, the brutal, sadistic tortures, the murders of farmers and their family members defies description. Farm attacks in South Africa are something like 700% higher than any other country in the world. How can that be considered normal or acceptable? And there's an ANC councillor, Bekenosi Mvelasi, had killed the Boer, killed the farmer on his Twitter account, and that was challenged. He put, I want to cleanse this country of all white people. We must do as Hitler did with the Jews to the white people of South Africa. And he was of the Gauteng Arts and Culture Department. This is an ANC councillor, Valafi Kumalo. I want to cleanse this country of all white people. White people deserve to be hacked and skinned. You must be bushed alive, whatever that means, and skinned, and your offspring must be used as garden fertilizer. Now, do you think this man was disciplined for writing that? Not at all. He continues to be a town councillor for the ANC. And then there's Luvalo Max Menswezi. I hate white people. Just get me a bazooka or an AK-47 so that I can do the right thing and kill these demon-possessed humans. And white South Africans, your time is up, says Motwani. In the near future, you will pray and wish you were black. The time is up. Pack your bags and go or suffer the consequences. God is not on your side. The Bible you brought is working against you. Blacks are awake. Take note. And that's something put on Facebook and Twitter. And then Julius Malemba, you bleep, 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 white pigs. We will kill you within the next 6 weeks. And we will take your land and we will rape your women and we will rape your children till their last breath is out. Your kids will be burned. And especially in Pretoria, in a free state, we will torture you and we will take a video clip and spread it on YouTube. And we are going to rape you bitches and this and the other, and we'll kill you and bleep, bleep, all of this stuff. This is on Facebook. And this is what you know, they've got. Your families will be slaughtered. Whites, we are coming for you, with multiple exclamation marks. So this is what we have to deal with in this country. And then next year is the last year for all whites. I mean, all whites, without exception. We're going to kill and rape you. We're going to infect you with AIDS. We will teach you not to mess with us. And then there's these people dressed in the ANC official outfits where they've got a white doll, like a baby doll, a toy, which they've got a noose around its neck, and they've got a cardboard thing saying racist Nazi, and they're hanging this little baby in effigy. It's only a dummy toy in this case, but the message is clear. Hate. Here's somebody posting something on Facebook. I use my guns only to rob and kill Indians and whites. Please, fellas, join me. We have to rape the kids with AIDS virus too. And that's someone whose handle is Kill the Pigs. And then here's a Facebook message from Julius Malema. I'm the Messiah of our time. I will give free land to my people. Unlike Jesus or Nelson Mandela and his friends, I don't need to go to a stupid prison to save my people, says Julius Malema. Kill the Boer, kill the racist, kill Afrikaans. Attention, all comrades. Time to take back Northwest University. And these are posters being distributed. And they are dancing with tires around their necks, referring to the necklace murders where they put an automobile tire around you to wedge your arms in, pour gasoline over the person, set them alight. And with our tires and our matches, we will liberate this country. And over, you can see these kind of messages that I've got here on, you know, we have no choice. We have to kill the white babies simply because they're going to grow up and they'll oppress our babies. So kill white babies. When the right time comes, chop their heads off. Let them become headless little white racists. And this is Mufada Dangalawani sitting at his job as a government official, and he's got this Facebook post underneath. So it would seem that the most racist people are the ones crying racist all the time. And that shouldn't surprise us. I've got another one from Andile Makhsitami, who's the head of Blackland First. And he's put a tweet out there. Every time I hear the name Jesus, I'm reminded of white people. I'm glad he won't come back, because if he comes back, we will kill him again and we will cremate his body so he cannot rise again. And that's BLF leader Andile Makhsitami. And blasphemous, racist, hatred. Julius Malema screaming, we must cut the throats of the whites. And so this is what we are dealing with. We're dealing with race hatred and genocidal maniacs literally talking about we're going to do to the whites in South Africa what was done to the Tutsis in Rwanda. And they are make it open and blatant. So Nelson Mandela started this, and there are films out on this. There's one film called Farmland, and there's another one called Farm Murders. If you want to know more, there are these documentary films, there's these books out like kill the boer, kill the farmer, and so on. The scripture is quite clear about our responsibility. We should speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. We are facing an attempt to have genocide in this country. We've got a corrupt, incompetent government that has destroyed this country. That was the superpower of Africa, once one of the greatest countries in Africa. South Africa now, we have scheduled power failures because the government can't keep the lights on. We have water shortages, tremendous water shortages. We've got to literally be walking around with buckets of water because the plumbing doesn't work, water cutoffs. And you've got a government where the postal service doesn't work in the country anymore. They've stolen it blind. South African Airways was once one of the best airlines in the world, and now it's literally doesn't work at all. So there's the film that Katie Hopkins produced on the killing fields, and then there's Farmlands, which is another film produced by a Canadian on what's going on here as well. So it's not just South Africans that are speaking up about what's going on, but we're very grateful that Donald Trump has brought this matter to the surface, because people need to know this is what happens when you betray your kith and kin and hand them over to the hands of Marxist terrorists who are trained in Red China. And right now we've got in South Africa a government that is affiliated with Red China, with Iran and other anti-Western, anti-Christian governments, persecutors of the church. And one of the reasons they want to take the farms in South Africa is they believe that there could be minerals underneath, maybe diamonds, gold, whatever, which rare earth minerals that Red China wants. And so what if the people starve, if we close these farms and take them, strip mine them? Small price to pay for Red China to get the minerals they want. And this government in South Africa is in the pockets of Red China, and they seem to be able to get them to do whatever they want. So they're chasing away investors. They're chasing away people born in this country who don't feel they've got a future in a land with a government where they literally sing about killing them and tweet about torturing them and chopping off their children's heads and all of that sort of thing. So if somebody tries to tell you it's fake news that there's genocide being incited in South Africa, or racial laws discriminate against whites in South Africa, you can tell them, no, Donald Trump has called it out right. This is what's happening. And the ANC government of Cyril Ramaphosa is lying and they're in denial about the reality that's facing us all. So back to you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. I was surprised to hear about the Red China being after these farms, allegedly, because I reflect on the Boer War, in which it wasn't just the British soldiers that were sent. And I always find it amusing is the wrong word, because it was a tragedy that so many innocent people died. But I think they call it the Boer War when Boer means farmer. And I think that if they called it the Farmer War, it wouldn't sound, you know, that good, would it? And so I think that that's exactly why they called it the Boer War. But I was reading an article in the Barnes Review that had our mutual, was written by our mutual friend, the late great Stephen Mitford Goodson, and he was talking about how this was essentially being financed by the Rothschild family, the Boer War, to get these farms for the same reasons that you just mentioned that Red China were after the farms. And I recall seeing even that the soldiers were being sent hampers, and it wasn't from the British Army, it was from the Rothschild family, these Christmas hampers that were arriving. So why is that sort of change from this family trying to seize the farmland in South Africa over 100 years ago to Red China today? Do you see any overlap here, or is it a completely different group of people trying to get the land today?
Well, we're talking about the Rothschilds for leading the globalist cause back a century ago, and Red China now is part of the globalist cause. I think they are in many ways being manipulated by a lot of the same powers, because you've got these multinational globalists who seem to be happy to work with communists. The communists are often doing their bidding today. And I think that just as you had Armand Hammer and the Rockefellers happily involved with the Soviet Union and building up and bankrolling the Bolsheviks, just as was documented by Anthony Sutton in his The Best Enemy Money Can Buy and Wall Street and bankrolling of the Bolshevik Revolution, that in many cases, the people you think are capitalists are, in fact, funders of the communists. And so we've got some of these people who they're monopoly capitalists. They're not into real free enterprise like we would believe in. They want the middleman, the small guy flattened, and they just want these massive multinational globalist entities working along with communist governments, because they don't have a problem with communist governments. Communist governments work happily with these multinational billionaires. They work together quite happily to oppress the common man. And to think that the poor British Tommies were being used for the dirty work for the Rothschilds back in what we call the Engelse Oorlog, or the Anglo-Boer War in South Africa, because, you know, to call it the Boer War suggests the Boers were the ones starting the fight. But this was a fight picked by the British Foreign Office because they wanted the gold, they wanted the diamonds in South Africa for the Rothschilds, which is why the Rothschilds gave these very generous hampers to Commonwealth forces fighting in South Africa to gain control of the diamonds and the gold in this country. It's just tragic, absolutely hideous. But yes, you can look at the Opium Wars as well, where the Rothschild family wanted to be able to trade with China, and China wasn't interested in trading with anyone. And so they got many of them addicted to opium. And the Opium Wars were basically to get the Rothschilds access to the Chinese market. So now, today, drugs worldwide are being coordinated by the Secret Service of China. They're deliberately drugging the West. And the Soviet Union tried to do that. And the KGB and the secret police in Cuba used to run, and that's been documented in Red Cocaine, how the cocaine getting into America was being organized by the Secret Services of Cuba and the Soviet Union. Well, today it's apparently Red China who's doing that job of drugging the people in the West. And I think it's amazing where you see Red China's hands these days. They're all over Africa. They're doing the dirty work in Africa that the Rothschilds were doing back 100 years ago. So I wonder what control the Rothschilds have over China, or how they're trying to use them.
Thank you, Peter. And ladies and gentlemen, Peter has a Give, Send, Go link on all his show posts on achshow.com. Please support his work. And before we go, Peter, also you'll find a list of websites there. But Peter's going to tell you about the most popular one first, and then how you can contact him. So, Peter, over back to you.
Thank you so much. So we are fighting to resist the New World Disorder and the powers that should not be here in Africa, and trying to stand for faith and freedom and resist these demonic, evil Marxists and globalists. As you can see more about our mission on www.frontlinemissionsa.org. So it's Frontline Mission SA, short for South Africa. So frontlinemissionsa.org, and you'll find books, e-books, print-on-demands, audio-visuals, presentations we've given, projects, and these Give, Send, Goes are for different projects, such as what we are seeking to do in the Congo and Zimbabwe, Zambia, all of Africa, up in Sudan and so on, and of course in South Africa, where we are trying to build a stronghold for pro-Western Christian freedom and civilization in the Cape of Good Hope. So your prayers and support would be greatly appreciated. FrontlineMissionSA.org, and my personal email, peter@frontline.org.za. Thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you so much, Peter. Okay, folks, that concludes today's show, entitled The Real Story of the Communist Plan of Genocide Against Whites in South Africa. I want to thank all of you for joining us today. Peter and I will be back with you in 2 weeks' time. I'll be back with you all at the weekend. And until then, folks, have a wonderful week, and bye for now.